I'm Amanda.
Hey, Amanda.
Everyone, oh, go ahead.
No, you go for it.
I was just saying hi, everyone. I'm Barb.
Hi, Barb. Thanks for being here.
I was just going to say we're going to kind of go back and forth with our time tonight. So we're each going to start first with about 15 minutes each, just sharing on our own stories. And then we'll do each on our work together. So I'm going to go ahead and start unless you wanted to say anything more, Barb, before. Sound good? Okay. So for my part of tonight's story, I was going to share specifically about like the trauma. I try really hard to focus on me and going forward, but I'm actually really going to focus and try and share about the specific trauma. Some of my trauma was like passed down. My trauma is interesting because a lot of it was not me going through it. So that's why I'm going to start there. So on my mom's side, alcoholism runs in the family as a history, as kind of a coping mechanism. And then when she was 12, my grandpa, her dad, was in this really intense accident where he became a double amputee, like that. He was on a construction site and he grabbed something that was a crane, it's connected to like an electrical wire, and his full body was electrocuted. And God blessed him with a nail he stepped in, and he was wearing a watch. And so the metal went away from his heart, so he didn't die, but completely fried the limbs where the metal was. So he went from being like a Marine and a cop and a construction guy, like back in the 50s, to a double amputee, like overnight. That was like their really intense shared trauma as a family. And from then on, my mom kind of took care of everyone, but specifically her parents, including stories of like my grandpa just wanting to give up and grabbing his gun and having it in the backyard, and the cops were called because he wanted them to shoot him. He did not want to live anymore. And my mom was the one who came and talked him through it, because my grandma just couldn't. I think she left my grandma for a while, from what I've heard from my uncles. So my mom took care of them, if you can believe it. My grandpa, my double amputee grandpa, lived to be almost 90. And got to meet my daughter. Like, that's how long he lived after all of that. And I got to get really close with him. So my mom would always say that my grandpa was not her dad. And I apologize, I'm outside. So if you hear the gardener, my toddler is inside having her bedtime routine. So I'm out here to be with you guys. So then my mom's trying to have her life. She meets my dad. She was 18 and my dad was 28. They're 10 years apart. And the way they described their story, they like immediately fell in love, but were too young. So they just, went their separate ways. And my dad went on tour for 10 years as a musician. He's a bass player and a trumpet player, and he sings a little bit. So they stopped talking for like a decade, and they each got married. And my dad's trauma is really intense emotional neglect. Like, he doesn't share a lot, but he shared with me that when he went to college, after he went on tour and finally decided to get a real person's job and become an accountant, he loved learning, and in one of his classes, I think it was a psychology or philosophy class, the assignment was to do something you've never done before, and he took his parents out for dinner and told them that he loved them because they had never said it and he had never said it. So on his side, it's really heavy emotional neglect. And then through all of that, I think the discovery at college, he decided to call my mom and just like make that happen, even though she was married and she had a 1-year-old. And they did it. I mean, they fought to like stay together, and they each divorced the spouses that they had. And my older sister became, stepdad, dad, and they had a son. So they had a girl and a boy, and my mom was done. And by then, when my sister was three and their son was like one, just about to be one, they went out for dinner one night on a date, probably the first one since he was born. And they left the kids with the babysitter. And in the bathtub that night, their one-year-old son, his name is Benjamin, he drowned. And they tell the story in pieces a lot, so it's hard to put it together. But that was their very intense shared trauma that was then passed very intensely to me because I was the next child. So it was really interesting higher power that you guys were talking about your bears before the meeting, because there was this big bear that they were going to give to him when he turned one, because it was so big he couldn't sleep with it yet. Like, it wouldn't have been safe. It's like this big. It's big. So my dad's dad saved it. Like, they saved it and gave it to me. And it's still mine. It's in my daughter's room. I took it to college with me and took it on planes. I was very attached. But I knew what this bear meant, like the presence of my brother. And that's even hard for me to say. I had to go to a lot of therapy I did my family tree and he wasn't on it. My therapist was like, you know, the deceased members should be on there too. And that includes your brother. And when she said that out loud, I was like, no, he wasn't my brother. I didn't get to know him. He died. And so if you can like wrap your heads around what we know now about trauma and how much healing would probably have needed to happen to be healthy. I was only born like 12 months after he passed. So they had like 3 months of therapy and then got pregnant again. And I was brought into this world where my mother, even in the womb, thought I was going to die at any minute and knew she couldn't handle it. So I, as a child, literally thought if I was not near my mom or in her arms that I would die. Had really intense anxiety. So that trauma was passed down to me, like, you will die if you're not here with me. I couldn't be with anyone else. I couldn't be at a daycare. I couldn't be with my aunt and uncles. I would just scream the entire time. No one else could like touch me but my mom and my sister. Growing up, like realizing how by two I had nightmares and knew my mom was completely emotionally closed off. I used to be like running through an airport in my bathing suit as a toddler, and there was a wolf ghost chasing me. This nightmare occurred till I was like 15. And I would get to the door and my mom was behind the door and I'd be screaming like, let me in, this thing's gonna get me. And like, she could not open the door. And the dream would come back whenever I think I was getting out of denial as a kid. It would just come back every night, like, she can't do this, like, just, you know, she can't do this. And my dad is the type who just shuts down, so I probably didn't think I was safe with him because he just wouldn't talk or be around. And I know that because I got in trouble when I was like 13 and I snuck out of the house, and we lived together obviously, and he didn't talk to me or look at me for like 6 months straight. So the emotional neglect and inability on his side is really strong. And my mom would try and push through it. She's would do a lot of false self. But there was nothing there. And by 4 o'clock every night to go to sleep, she would drink lots and lots of gin. And that's how she slept every night. So now thinking, like, I would be in my bed, terrified because I knew my brother's ghost was there. I mean, it was always there. When I was like 8, I started trying to like seek out terrible things to watch when my parents weren't looking, to try and replace terror in my head and in my brain, which obviously made it worse because then I had things to feed my imagination. But I just felt like whatever terrible things I was watching was better than what I knew was real and what I had in my life. In my childhood. But it strangely gave me, like, his presence gave me a lot of beautiful things. Like, I never took a minute for granted, even when I was a kid, because I knew I could die any second. So I pushed back and like wouldn't allow my parents to treat me in a way I didn't think was right, because I only had one life. I was told over and over emotionally and literally that I only had one life. So having his existence as my brother and accepting it, like in therapy, I'd been holding my older sister responsible. And I think that's because as a family, everyone was holding her responsible because she was the only one there. She was with him in the bathtub. And I just held on to the fact that she drowned him. And I'm sure my parents feel that like subliminally. And I was so angry and I was sobbing. And my therapist was like, she was three, like she was a kid. They don't understand that any of that kind of play holds these kind of repercussions. And that's when the adult child, I was already had programmed. That's when it hit me like right in the face. Like, oh, I was expecting her to be an adult at three. Just like I was expected to be an adult. When I was four, my dad left. They don't talk about why. I feel like it was a month, but my mom would wake up crying every morning and my older sister, who was eight, would go just stay with her until she could get out of bed. And it was at four, it was my responsibility to take care of my younger sister, who was two. So that's when I became an adult. Like for sure. And I had to get over all that terror because then I was there for her, which I do think was one of the huge reasons why I loved kids and wanted to be a mom and kind of broke through some of that dysfunction. Like my older sister can't, she doesn't want kids. She's still really terrified. So my brother's presence has been really intense and not talked about. Like I want to go digging. I want to know what the police report was. I want to know when he was born. There's so much that's not discussed because my mom's really ashamed. Like he was born before they were married and he was at their wedding. And I think a huge part of her thinks that God is punishing her for like getting divorced and then, you know, being with this other man and having a child before wedlock. And she really holds that like talisman or for lack of a better description. But I think about him often. And I was really glad my therapist said, like, your brother. And I try to talk about him now like he's my brother because living with his existence has been my life. I mean, that's the trauma that was put on to me. As well as then living with an alcoholic mother who chose to just stop. Like she chose to literally stop right then and there. She's still there. She's still like the drinking keeps her stuck there and she's fine with that, which means I lost my mom. So she lost her son and then I lost my mom. So my grief comes from that, but I don't think she understands that. And I do think that was literally the best she could have done. And, I'm going to share a musical piece with you. So I'm a musician, a little bit like my dad, somewhat to get closer with my dad, but also encouraged by my mom. She like made us do a band instrument when we were in elementary school, literally said we had to for at least 2 or 3 years. And mine was the saxophone because my mom loved Kenny G and I thought that she would love it if I could play like Kenny G could. So I do name my instruments and it is funny that I shared that with you guys because I named my tenor saxophone Kenra. So it was the coolest thing I could think of that wouldn't sound like Kenny G. So this is Kenra and I'm going to play something that's actually about my brother. And I shared this song my first year in college. I went to a music college in Boston we were in an ensemble and they were like, play a piece that tells us about you so we can learn about you. It sounds like such a fun. And I don't think I realized like how sharing my trauma like this would be. I didn't see it yet. So I brought this piece and was like, oh, you know, my 1-year-old brother died and my dad listens to this piece. It helps him, you know, like connect with him. It's Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton, but I have my favorite tenor saxophone player recorded that song by Eric Clapton. So it's this weird connection between what I do and my brother. And I played it for the class and they were all like absolutely shocked and had no idea what to do with themselves. So it was probably not the like best situation to do that. So I get to bring it to you all knowing that you understand and probably would be more supportive. So I'm going to share the backtrack, and I'm going to hope that you guys can hear both. I'm pretty sure you'll be able to. So the YouTube video will just be some guitar playing. So just give me a thumbs up if you can hear the guitar. Cool. Okay. And I think you can hear me talking too. So this is Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton. And I mean, it's my version, but it's for my brother. Okay, I hope that was heard. And that's my part of my story. And then I'm going to toss it off to Barbara so you guys can hear hers.